Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Naked Men podcast. A month away means that we are back to play. And Ben, you're playing topless this week.
I am. I don't really know why. I just joined the call topless and it would take about 10 seconds for me to find my shirt. You also just called me buff, so I'm feeling really good about myself.
Yeah, buff boy.
Boy. Buffy the Vampire Boy.
That's what we've been doing for a month. That's why we took a month off, because we both had to get buff.
Here we go. And you're not shirtless.
No, I think what this really demonstrates is how magical, and I don't want to go all Professor Brian Cox on everyone, but we're obviously calling from two different climates. Mm. One of us is a buff boy, naked, pristine facial hair.
I mean, I need to shave
this
away.
On display in Taiwan, beautiful Taiwan. Whereas I'm calling from equally beautiful Wales countryside, but it's fucking freezing here. So I've got a little oil radiator behind me.
Oil radiator? Like, holy shit.
Yeah, it's like an electric one, but it's an oil electric radiator. They're the best. They're so much better than like those shitty little fan heaters. T-shirt on, but the t-shirt has some nice artwork on it.
Artwork.
Pretty nice. Yeah, little artwork, and a big hoodie.
I'll be sweating. I've got a bit of a sweat on right now.
Oh no, it's cold as in here. So, in case anyone ever listens to the podcast and immediately goes, "I wonder what you guys are wearing," I can always see that Ben has either been drawing on his hand or he's been to a nightclub recently.
Oh, I was teaching my students left and right. That was what I was doing.
Did you do it at the club?
Yeah, I took my students to the club, so we get free stamps. Gave them all tequila shots. The club.
Like it's an American Pie episode, movie, whatever. It's been a while. Apologies for that. I'm sure you got used to it. There's been plenty of content going off on the feed. It's mostly been Scott and Carl talking about just the every single second of content that Disney Plus releases, because they are permanently on their knees for Kevin Feige.
Nice people are.
Just absolutely. So Ben, what would you like to talk about? We got a lot of news to catch up on.
A bunch of shit.
I want to announce how not mad I am about something, but maybe we'll get to that in a minute.
All right. Do you want to talk about Spider-Man 2? Our thoughts, our impressions. You know, once I opened this document, right, because I wrote the notes for it, like, whenever we last managed to do it, and it was Spider-Man 2 anticipation, because, like, trailer came out, like, 5 or 6 days before the game came out. So the last time we did this was before Spider-Man 2 came out.
Yeah, which isn't actually that long ago, but it has...
No.
Who wants to start? I think the listeners will know exactly what you're going to say, but I think all of the listeners, because I've built up a persona, will presume that I am mad about this game in some capacity.
You're mad about everything.
No, I'm not mad about Spider-Man 2. I think Spider-Man 2 is... I was a bit hyperbole when it first came out, because I was like messaging Ben every 5 minutes, like, this is the best game ever.
You already did that.
Now I have experienced it. I've not played anywhere near as much as everyone else. I've not even finished the main story. I still don't even have the symbiote suit. That's how.
Yeah,
but I've done like, I think I play games differently to people, because Carl, friend of the show and fellow Rogue Opinions person, he just like blitzed the story and then done none of the side missions. I have done basically I ensure that I've done every side mission I can do at the time, and then do the main story. So I'm like nearly done all of the flame. Last time I saved, I needed to race towards Marco's wife, wherever she is, or daughter, or whatever it is. I've been doing all of like the, everything's disappeared from my head, May Foundation missions with the plants. I'm doing all the Mysteriums, and the last mission I did was like saving Tombstone. So.
Wow, so you're just gonna be able to go through the story.
By the time I do the final bit of the story, I will have. I want the finale to be me platinuming the game. I get to do the finale and then it just goes bing, 100%.
That would be it. I'm not sure.
I don't think you could do it.
Because I think maybe some side missions come available after this.
I've also been doing like all of the random trophies, like all the achievements. Yeah. So sometimes some of them took me like multiple attempts, just to fly around enough and shit. But genuinely, I think this game is really tough for AAA titles because sometimes the expectation is so massive. So this is a massive budget game. It's a sequel to arguably two of the best superhero games ever made, potentially two best games in recent times in Spider-Man PS4 and Miles Morales. On top of that, it's Spider-Man, so it's immediately associated with the biggest franchise in the MCU and stuff overall. It just had Into the Spider-Verse come out, so Spider-Man hype is at a peak. We will get to the Madam Web trailer. Jesus Christ. And then, so it had a lot to achieve, and I'm like furthered away through the game, and I think they've absolutely nailed everything.
Oh, they have. Yeah. Not only did I platinum the game, I've beat the story twice.
You did it in like 3 days as well.
Oh, I did. I'm not gonna lie, I cancelled a lot of my plans to do this. And like there's a couple times in the year where a game will come out. Like it happened last year with God of War Ragnarok, and it happened this year with I can't think of another game I was really excited about this year. But Spider-Man 2 was definitely one of those games as well. It's like countdown days, absolutely thought about calling sick that it came out. But then, I'm Skinner. I'm so excited for this game. I love Spider-Man. I love video games. I love the last few games. I was so excited for it. And it just, I don't think it's like 10 out of 10, absolutely like historically amazing game, but like it just, at least met my expectations in every way. Like it does, like it was such a joy to platinum this game because like so much improved a lot. And I think the story is a bit better than the first one, even though Miles Morales and PS4 Spider-Man had really good stories. I think this is the best one so far. It's the most, there's the most to it. It's the most complex. It's the best writing, I think. It goes darker than even like I'd really expect, like, and there is some really real moments in it. And also like the best improvement is made from the other games is like there's stories to everything you do. Like you mentioned about the Marco stuff, like you have these little Sandman enemy fights, right, where you get the crystals and break them apart. You have stories and everything. You do all the Mysteriums that leads to something cool. You do the random birds that you have. Are you there yet? You're probably there yet. Where you have to follow the birds, right? And you that leads to something cool. Like everything leads to something. Story and interesting. There's not like a ton of side quests in this game. There's probably 10 to 15, right? Maybe a few more. But like a bunch of them are really good. Like bunch of them, I don't want to spoil any of them, but like I messaged you like day two of this game. The side quest made me tear up in this game. A fucking mission that takes 10 minutes. Another one got me like kind of choked up. And I was just like, this, and it is exactly what Spider-Man should be. And I love this game so much. Like the reason I started a new story. Because I wanted my roommate to see, because he's a nerd as well. Like he likes seeing this, he's interested in the stuff that I have. So like he kind of wanted to like see some of the games. So I was like, all right, I'll start a new game. And it was just like easy to go through it because I was like, oh, I want to experience that moment again. I want to do this. I want to do this. Like, and I just blasted through it again on like in maybe like 9 or 10 days this time. It was such a joy. I'll probably never play it again because I platinumed it and I beat the game twice. But like, I had a great 2 weeks of just being obsessed with this game.
Yeah, I think you will play it again because I think it's going to be fun. I mean, I've got Spider-Man remastered on my PS5. And I think after I'm done with this and I've gone back to Assassin's Creed, which I've literally played like once since Spider-Man came out. So I'm probably going to have to restart Assassin's Creed like completely because I remember what's happened. But yeah, I think I might go back and replay through them all again. I think that might be fun to just do like one after another. to see, because the story links in so nicely. And I think one thing they did really well was scale. Like, they promised us a scaled up map and they delivered. They gave us like really distinct areas. And I know that's pretty easier to do when you're literally mapping a city that already exists. But for such a massive map, they also really got the traversing of it right. Like, the web wings make sense as in story, as an improvement for the characters into their way of traveling. But also, it's such a good tool.
It is,
as well. So I think the opening of the game is just unbelievable with Sam, and it literally sets you up for what you're about to experience. So I'm looking forward to carrying on playing. I'm going to try and play a bunch this weekend and get this game finished by hopefully the next time we record.
It won't be hard.
I think the villains, the villains are really fun. The ones that I've experienced so far, the side missions lead to some interesting stuff. The bits with like Yuri, continuation of that story from, I can't remember what the DLC is called now, but City That Never Sleeps, whatever it's called.
Yeah,
from Spider-Man PS4. And then Black Cat, I'm quite interested in as well, because you went to Paris and I was immediately like, well, that's the DLC story.
Oh, I love that mission. Paris. Yeah.
Yeah, when you get the little Wong Easter egg at the end.
That's cool.
So that's cool. They've really built up the wider universe as well, because I know we got Wolverine coming. I know there's now immediately talks of a Venom game. Not that I've seen any of Venom yet. Daredevil keeps getting teased. I've sort of saw that area with The Office and stuff, and the Fantastic Four is there. I hope we don't get a Fantastic Four game, because I think the Fantastic Four are rubbish.
I mean, I think they're great in the right storyteller. I mean, they could be. I'd love a Fantastic Four game. I'd prefer a Daredevil game, but like, I'd prefer a Fantastic Four game over a Venom game, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't know what you would really do. I think it would be like, remember that old Hulk game years ago?
Yeah, like Absolute Carnage or whatever.
Yeah, something like that. I don't think we need more Venom content.
No, we don't.
I think we're interested in stuff.
Random Spider-Man shit. Let's talk about the Madame Web trailer.
Holy fuck. Looks so... I know you shouldn't judge a book by its cover. And trailers aren't everything, and I moan about trailers a lot, but this looks absolute pure garbage.
It does. It looks exactly like I thought it would, and it's like just random bullshit. It's gonna be unsatisfying. It's gonna have some like random fucking Easter eggs, like Adam Scott might be Ben Parker, but whatever they do with that, it's gonna be like, all right, great. It's gonna make like Ben Parker. That's what is going around the internet, right? And apparently Emma Roberts is in the movie as like an undisclosed role, and she's going to be Peter Parker's mother, apparently. And the movie's going to make like $300 million or whatever, and it's going to be like slightly profitable. So they're like, oh, let's continue with this fucking bullshit Spider-Verse thing, right?
But without Spider-Man.
Yeah, I don't know.
They'll get Spider-Man at some point because there's too much money on the table. But then they've got plenty to choose from. There's like three Spider-Man. So.
Yeah. I mean, if they suddenly am like Dangerous Miles Morales, I'm buying a ticket day one. I'm like, all right.
You got please don't let Sony do that. That should not be in Sony's hands at all.
Well, all right. Secondly, Sony have also made Across the Spider-Verse and Into the Spider-Verse. That is a Sony property as much as Venom and
Morbius. Yeah, but I mean, they're slapping your name on something and then going like, okay, Sony are responsible for this because they produced it, but actually Lord and Miller did everything. And then there's when they actually have full control and it's down to them, and then you just go, what the fuck are you guys doing?
Amazing Spider-Man 2 was not a good movie. I had some fun with it, but it feels like they've just made Amazing Spider-Man 2 under a different name every time they've done one of these movies, like when they've done with Morbius and Venom 2 or whatever. And it's just like this movie's kind of a mess, and you're just like, you're throwing shit at people. There might be like a charming scene here or there, but you don't really know what you're gonna do, so you just like, oh, I'm just going to write a script, and it's going to be slightly about spider people, and it's going to have like a shit villain that is pulled from two issues of this comic, and people will like it because we put a lot of spiders in the trailer, and the mother was researching spiders in Africa, you know?
Oh my god, yeah. I forgot about in the trailer. It's literally like a YouTube commentary over it, which is like, "Well, my dad was over in thingy researching spiders, and then
whoa, that's how you get your powers somehow." Yeah, it's just
there's a guy in a gimp suit.
Yeah, and like a really tight Spider-Man. So like, I don't hate. I kind of like his weird Spider-Man-esque dark spider suit or whatever. But it's like way too tight. It's like ridiculously tight. It's like a morph suit.
It's like, I think they've been working out and then they were just like, "Look, give me the tightest suit possible. I want everyone to know that I got ready for this."
Been working out for Madam Web.
Working out for Adam Web. Like, of all the movies that got canned recently, I'm like, Adam Web feel like makes it.
I'd much rather see Batgirl or Wile E. Coyote or whatever.
But... yeah, Warner Bros. Are a different kettle of fish completely.
What the fuck are they doing? What the fuck is going on over there? But people, since it's cancelled, people have been like, "No, this movie is great. This Wile E. Coyote movie with John Cena was actually really good." But
yeah, apparently test screenings and everyone fucking loved it. It's John Cena being Wile E. Coyote.
I think that would sell. Yeah, like, I really do think that would actually sell. But now people are like, have no faith.
I hope it's John Cena playing Wile E. Coyote in a Wile E. Coyote onesie.
Yes, I do. Yeah, everything else, if he fully believes his Wile E. Coyote, everything else is animated.
It's like Birdman.
that actually be really awesome. Yeah.
That would genuinely be amazing. But yeah, Madam Web, it looks crap. I will probably watch it in the comfort of my own home one day on a Sunday.
It'll be a great hangover movie that I'll just be like, won't give a shit if I finally fall asleep. And yeah, that'll be it.
I wonder if Venom's in it.
Sure. I mean, hopefully. But is this set in the 1980s or something? There's times where people have really old computers and they have what are they called? Pay phones and shit.
Oh, I just wasn't paying that much attention then.
Yeah.
All right. Mm. I still hope Venom's in it. I hope Venom's in it right at the end and he just eats
Venom. They'll definitely tell you before the movie. They'll show it in the next trailer. Even if it's the mid-credit scene.
How many Venom jokes do you reckon are in the movie?
Seven.
Seven Venom jokes.
Seven Venoms, yeah.
Like an Morbius one where he just goes, "We are Venom." And it's just has anyone ever called him Venom other than Tom Hardy?
Yeah. We're like, "All right, good for you, man." Yeah, everyone's like,
"How do you know?"
The weird black penis thing, you know?
Yeah.
Thing that looks really phallical. Yeah.
Oh well. Anyway, that's Madam Web. Looks crap.
Talking of WV and other villains, we're talking about some best villains because we are doing the final episode of the best. We take all the things. So we did best weapon, best other shit, but now we're doing best villains. So we've got a bunch of villains that we think are the best, and we're gonna propose them. We're gonna pitch them as the best. Mr. Nathan, do you have a villain that you'd wish to propose?
Yeah, I do. I'm gonna start this off hard. I'm gonna go in with arguably the best action movie villain of all time. There is no better than Hans Gruber from Die Hard.
Oh, he was one of mine, but I deleted him. I remember that. Yeah. All right. Your reason, sir?
His plan was miraculous. His plan was amazing, ruined by one fly in the ointment, as he said in the movie. He's merciless. But kind. He is
kind.
Yeah, he seems like a kind man, I reckon. He's got just the best plan. And he's got a solid team behind him. And they wouldn't have got away with it if it wasn't for goddamn John McClane.
Medellin.
He would have got away with it with pure ease if it wasn't. And he much did. Oh, yeah, yeah, he nearly, very nearly got away with it completely. Best accent of all time from Alan Rickman. Best Alan Rickman playing a German trying to be American ever. He's like, Bill, play.
Yeah, sometimes it's in German.
Yeah, I think he was German or he's Austrian. Ah, something like that. Who gives a shit?
Hans Gruber sounds German.
Yeah, I mean, Austria is just next door. So, let's say German. So, yeah, I think he is arguably the best heistman. He's the best bad guy heistman, easily.
I think he's definitely up there, for sure.
Everyone fooled.
He's weirdly charming, and he's also, like, you kind of get his point of view a little bit, and he does have a good plan. And there is, like, some... And I also love the moment where he drops from the... John McClane kind of defeats him, right? When he drops from the towers. And you can see, like, the fear in the eyes. You see, like, he's like, oh, fucking shit. Like, he's a human being, but he's also... there's some layers to him, right? He's weirdly lovable.
I don't know if I really get his point of view, because his point of view was just steal this gold.
Yeah, but he's also, like, he wasn't trying to kill people.
He wasn't. You say that he wasn't trying to kill people, but then when Theo, that piece of shit, was gonna give John McClane up, he did point blank shoot him in the head.
Didn't like stitches.
Yeah, snitches get stitches. But no stitches will save you from a bullet to the head. So I think his plan is just so brilliant as well. When he brought in, like, when he knew the FBI were gonna come in, he knew how to fool them. And he did fool them. It was literally just John McClane that he couldn't fool. He could fool the entire FBI, but not one.
A random dude. Cop. Yeah. Agreed. Yeah, I think that's such a good movie. And it wouldn't be as good a movie. It wouldn't be anything compared to what it is without Hans Gruber. Because, like, yeah, he's memorable. There's great lines. Alan Rickman is fucking awesome.
Yeah, hadn't been in movies till then. It was his first movie.
It was his first movie. Mm-hmm. Really? That's insane. I don't think Hans Gruber is the best, but I think he's top five, probably. Top five.
Well,
I'd say he's top five villains.
Well, let's see.
He's like number five.
Let's see who you better him with then, Mr. Okay. Buff Boy.
I'm not buff. Dun, 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 dun. You already know what it is. Everyone listening to this already knows who I'm going to say. I'm going to say one, Darth Abraham Vader. He's the most iconic.
Abraham.
Character in cinema. Like, honestly, he might be. Like, I can't think of anyone more iconic than Darth Vader.
Austin Powers.
I'd say Austin Powers is a lower level than Darth Vader. Oh, Austin Powers is great. I love a bit of Austin. But, you know, he's no Darth Vader. The twist, that music.
You know what? I'm going to say, you're arguing that he's better than Hans Gruber. Well, what's Darth Vader's plan?
He wants to rule over the Empire with his son, with the galaxy, as the new emperor. He wants to rule over it with his son. His plans change throughout the films. Adds, like, a lot of depth. He's in such a place of pain and turmoil, I think, in A New Hope. And at the end of, by the time of Return of the Jedi, he wants his son to come with him. He wants his son to understand he's been manipulated. He knows the Emperor is a piece of shit, and he wants to do things a little bit better with his son, but he still doesn't understand the way to be better is to renounce the Empire completely. He doesn't understand that, right? He wants better
really
things.
He's really a bad guy. He's just a lost sheep.
He is a bit of a lost sheep, not gonna lie. But he did kill like 28-year-olds at one point, which is that's pretty bad, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. They were Jedi. They were gonna have life of virginity.
Yeah, if you're bad,
he saved those kids from a cult.
I mean, it is a cult, but like most things are. Yeah, so I think Darth Vader is just like, there's no, he's iconic for a reason. His looks, his sound, like there's so much. You could see anyone could not even, I know a bunch of people who's never seen a Star Wars film. They know who Darth Vader is. They could hear the breathing. They know who Darth Vader is. They could hear the music, which I made a beautiful rendition of. They know, or probably, they know Star Wars music. They don't know it's the Imperial March. Also, we've explored his uprising. He's explored his origins and so many things because, you know, the Disney Star Wars machine has to keep running. But a lot of those things are fairly good. I'm not saying the prequels are great, but, you know, there's some charm to them.
Because this bracket is called Best Villain.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Palpatine's the villain. I think Darth Vader's just like, he's a pretty shitty guy, but I don't think he's the villain.
Palpatine is the main villain of Star Wars, but Darth Vader is absolutely the villain. He just gets redeemed at the end of the three films, the main three films he's in.
Yeah, you're pretty right. You understand Star Wars better than me. Is he more iconic as a villain than Hans Gruber?
Yes, I think Hans Gruber is an iconic villain. I think go to random five people, you show them a picture of Hans Gruber, and they'll be like, oh, is that Snake? You know, and you go, you show Darth Vader, and they'll be like, that's Darth Vader. Yeah, and like everyone knows Darth Vader.
I reckon they'll go, isn't that the shitty husband from Love Actually? Yeah, you're probably right. But I still think Hans Gruber is, if we're looking for best villain, there is no redeeming Hans Gruber. He was going to blow up that entire skyscraper so that he could fake his own death and fly away in a helicopter with Nakatomi Plaza's thingy of money, safe full of money.
If we were saying just A New Hope versus Die Hard, I'd say Hans Gruber wins for sure. Like, his plan's better. Because Darth Vader, like, A New Hope, it's obviously, like, iconic in so many ways. But, like, it's not the greatest film in the world, to be honest. Like, it's very simple. And, like, what he does is, like, oh, he's a bad guy. And he flies off with Luke and kills an old man at one point. It's like, all right. He's, like, a weird robot thing. The Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi, which are vastly better films than A New Hope, obviously had a lot of the actual character. And I think also just, is it the greatest twist in cinema history that Luke is his son? I don't think anything ever beats that. Right,
and I think it does, because I'm going to introduce, this is a perfect segue for my next villain, which is Kaiser Sose from The Usual Suspects.
Oh, okay.
You want to talk about greatest twist in movie history?
I've never actually watched all of it.
Oh my God, you would love it. It's so...
I know, I've tried to watch it several times.
The Kaiser Sose, played by the...
Is it Kevin Spacey?
Played by a man that recently won his court case.
Wait, he won it,
all right. Yeah, I think he won it. He won one of them or something. Anyway, Kevin Spacey. Yeah. Kaiser Sose, he spends most of the movie being interrogated by police as he uses all his acting nous to pretend to be a disabled man who looks like he's too weak, too like tiny to be involved in what the police are interrogating him for. Turns out the entire time he is the manipulative asshole that he keeps talking about. He is Kaiser Sose. And there's that amazing scene at the end where he's doing his limp. And then he gets around the corner from the police thingy, and then he just starts walking normally, gets in the car, and he's gone, and he's got away with everything. An amazing movie, The Usual Suspects. It's fantastic. He is a deplorable bad guy. He is a murderer, a drug lord, and everything. And he's also like, in this universe, he's like this legend that whenever people hear the name Kaiser Sose, they climb up. they shit themselves. And no one knows who Kaiser Sose is. No one even knows if this Kaiser Sose is real. There's people that pretend to be Kaiser Sose in the movie, like, because they're trying to take advantage of the fact that no one knows who this guy is.
That Banksy.
He is everything in this universe. He is everything.
He owns
everything. So Kaiser Sose, that's the best twist in... possibly the best twist in history.
Yeah, a lot of people would probably agree. I know I haven't watched these. I've only seen the first 30 minutes of it about three times, but the I don't know why I haven't watched it for maybe all the way through. But I know Kevin Spacey was kind of, so to say, from like pop culture media or some shit. And I know how much people love that twist, right? And I know how revered it is, you know? So I think it's absolutely iconic. I think it's a better pick than Hans Gruber, even though Hans Gruber is good, but like, because it is I think this villain is a lot more revered.
Yeah, he is. Kaiser Sose, he's certainly more feared in terms of movie universe than Hans Gruber, and I also think he is a better villain and an overall villain than Darth Vader. He's not as iconic because Darth Vader has just as more reach for Star Wars appeals to a wider audience than Usual Suspects. Sure. But he is a proper villain. Darth Vader's like first in command to the actual villain from the story.
I get you.
And then he gets redeemed, he loses his hands, and he's got a shitty little mask on. And sure, he kills some 8-year olds, but that's where he peaked. That was his peak bad guy stuff.
I mean, he built a planet as well.
Yeah, and he built two shitty little ball spaceships, and they both got blown up.
That's true. They're bad ventilation.
Kaiser Sose built a really shitty ventilation. Kaiser Sose built like an empire. Proper empire.
I mean, Darth Vader literally built an empire that was only
It got blown up like twice, and then it got replaced with some like emo kids.
Yeah, I mean, there is a lot of emo kids in Star Wars.
Yeah, everyone
is
in
there any emo kids in the Usual Suspects?
No, everyone's a badass in the Usual Suspects. Everyone in Star Wars is like a whiny bitch.
That is like 80% of the characters.
Who's next?
All right. I think, got some really good picks. I just looked down because I haven't looked at this document in about a month. I think two ones you're going to like. I'll say Fletcher from Whiplash. Whiplash, one of my very favorite movies. I adore this movie. Anytime I get slightly serious with a girl, I make her watch Whiplash. And that's like a very true. Anytime I'm on like the sixth date or sort of seventh date with a girl, I'm like, we gotta watch Whiplash, and I want to know what your opinion is. Like, it's like really sad, but I do need this.
It's like an acid test.
Yeah. And if they hate it, there's no anything. One of the most realistic of the movie villains we have here, just extremely manipulative, extremely abusive, but in a way, a lot of people are that care about ambition and achievement. Like, a lot of people do care about that. I think anyone who's had a shitty boss, anyone who's had a bully in their life will relate to this villain. I think that is one of the best written villains, because you hate him so much, but he never does any crimes. He never kills a bunch of people. He never burns anyone alive or anything. But you hate him more than you hate people who do that things in movies. You hate him more than Kaiser Sose and Darth Vader, because you know someone a bit like him. You know someone like Fletcher. Maybe not as intelligent as Fletcher. Maybe not as well written. Maybe not as buff arms as Mr. J.K. Simmons had in that film. You know, like it. And the J.K. Simmons is absolutely one of my top three actors because of this movie. He's so good in it. And like he's the, and he also, he's weirdly iconic, even though it was an indie movie that, you know, had a lot of traction in 2015 or 14, wherever it came out. From Whiplash, like, I'm dragging, or I can't even remember it. That completely defeats my point. Are you dragging, are you rushing? You know, like, there's in the lexicon of pop culture, Flex is a place. And I think he is, if not the most iconic villain, one that I think he's one of the best written villains.
So he's a psychotic jazz maestro. Just fucking loves jazz. Sounds like a bad guy. He's very relatable. He's the most relatable villain we've spoken of so far. Everyone else has been like quite grand or outer worldly. But here's someone where, as you say, it's just a really shitty narcissistic boss. One of those people where you give them a little bit of power and they just like,
and they just goes the gods ahead of their they, world. Like, narcissist is the best way to describe Fletcher, for sure.
And we all know people like that,
That's
pretty good. That is good. That is good. I think you might be onto something with him.
I love that movie. Out of all my picks, it's probably my favourite of the movies, right? And Miles Teller's great, and it's really well-written story, and the pacing's amazing and all that stuff, but like, he's probably the shining star of this movie, is the Fletcher as this villain that just destroys the one's life because they tried to do well and he wasn't up to par for his own thoughts. Well, actually, like, there is a lot of ways you can take Whiplash. Fletcher also could be seen as the hero as well, which, I mean, I might be sort of spoiling Whiplash here, but like, Fletcher pushed this drummer to his absolute extreme so he could be the best, so he could beat all competition. If Fletcher was just like kind of nice to him, the character in Whiplash would never have reached the heights that he does.
So you're thinking Fletcher's actually the good guy, so he's disqualified.
People could see that view and be...
There's definitely people that are like, Fletcher did nothing wrong.
Yeah, oh yeah, 100%. But like, there, you can see that view and people are like, and be empathetic a bit, but I understand it for sure. That's why I like the character so much, because there's complexity to how he's written, right? So he's not the most maniacal. He doesn't kill anybody. He hasn't got any superpowers or anything. He's just a bit of a narcissist that is a conductor at a really high-end music school in America.
Speaking of complex, can I pitch you something slightly left field? Because I'm going to pitch someone who's actually portrayed as the good guy in the movie and is literally on the poster as the good guy. But I'm going to argue that they are actually one of the biggest villains in 80s teen comedy history. I'm bringing you Ferris Bueller from Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Why is he the bad guy?
Ferris Bueller. Have you seen Ferris Bueller's Day Off?
Yes, I have, a couple times.
Ferris Bueller is a manipulative, narcissistic liar.
Oh, he's definitely a narcissist.
Tricked his way to having days off from school, lied on the phone to authority figures, stole his friend's car without permission, continually lies to everyone that he knows about who he is, invented the fact that he was dying. All so that he could trick this poor girl into going to Los Angeles for the day, and probably got that teacher fired, like the headmaster fired, who was just trying to do his job.
That's true. Trying to take a roll call. Right?
And he got away with it. So he's probably done it again on the next Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yeah.
And the next Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Yeah. All until he gets hit by a car and turned into Inspector Gadget.
That is the canonical sequel.
Pretty much. It's Matthew Broderick for people that aren't getting the reference.
the same Matthew. And then Matthew Broderick in real life killed someone with his car.
Matthew Broderick's one of the biggest villains.
Sorry, Matthew Broderick.
I know you've just made a mini comeback in the next season of Only Murders in the Building, but
killed someone with carbon.
Yeah, you still ran someone over.
So. Sorry, Matt and Bronze.
So I think Ferris Bueller is he is the villain.
Yeah, I can see that for sure, because there's no real villain of that movie. And he just manipulates anyone close to him. Like he, like I said, he tells lies to his girlfriend, he tells lies to his best friend, who's like, and he gets his dad's car destroyed, which is the dad loves the car more than he actually loves the son. And it's bad news. The kid is bad news. He is the kid that your mum will be like, don't hang out with that guy.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. He is the worst person to know, the worst person to be friends with. The poor guy.
You think he's the best.
Because he's telling you that he does all this stuff, but like, he's literally lying. There's not a single person in that movie that he tells the truth to.
Yeah. He's a mass manipulator. He's a pathological liar. Ferris Bueller, man. What a piece of shit.
Yeah, he is a piece of shit. So I want to nominate him as the villain.
Could we crown him the best villain, even though everyone thinks he's the hero?
It's a very specific category. Maybe for the best next year when we do this again, when we've run out of ideas.
Oh, yeah.
We're just doing, like, best lizard on camera.
Best Pop-Tart,
you know? Best Pop-Tart. All right, I withdraw Ferris Bueller so that we can do that bracket one day.
I think it's a good idea, for sure. I'm talking about Anton Chigurh, the psychopath.
Oh, that was going to be my next one. Man.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I think it's a great choice. That movie is awesome.
I think he's the winner, honestly.
Maybe.
He's like he's like a shark in human form.
He's like just a force that feels like he just can't be stopped. He's so professional. He's so like alarming to be around. He's like, you talk to him for a second, and he's like his spidey senses are going right.
Pretty much.
He's the anti-Batman kind of thing. He's like, he's so obsessed with this being an assassin that he's so professional and good at it. And he has no empathy or care for a single person. He's just playing, right? He just feels like he's the ultimate narcissist. He's just playing around with other people. And it is like really intriguing and fascinating to watch.
Yeah, it's like the performance from Javier Bardem and Josh Brolin in this movie, the two of them together, is absolute magic. But I think Javier, the way he portrayed this character, I've no doubt that some of it was based on Arnold Schwarzenegger's performance in the first Terminator movie, which is going to be my next nomination. But I feel like you can lump these two in the same category, weirdly.
Okay.
Well, in the characters, because Terminator in the first movie, and I'm isolating the first movie. He's singularly focused because his entire programming is kill this kid, and that's it. And then it's almost like Anton Chigurh's programming or job is get this money, kill anyone that gets in the way, and it's just that tunnel vision, terrifying, almost robotic performance from him, where it is military precision. The air gun, nail gun thing is terrifying as a weapon. We all know the scene where Brolin is sat on the sofa and then the door thing pings through where he shoots the lock off. And it's just awful with that weird silenced air shotgun, whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's like awful. And I think it's not a horror movie, but if the Coens wanted it to, it could have been like genuinely one of the scariest movies ever made.
Yeah, because it's so the great thing about that movie is like we're so desensitized to like gun violence and like sword violence in movies because we've seen it so many times in like action films and whatever. We've seen it in Die Hard. We've seen it in fucking Terminator. We've seen it, like everything, right? But that we're watching a movie is quite brutal. They added a horror element to like gun violence again because like I can't even pinpoint exactly why it is, but you're all right. It verges on horror, like the scenes he's in. You just feel uncomfortable, and then he just does massacres, right? And he's so blasé about it. He's like, he adds to the character.
He has to kill. He doesn't have to kill all these people, but the way he almost like looks at them is that they are just these little obstacles in the way. And it's like, it is inconvenient you being alive and in front of me right now. So I'm going to fix that by stopping that. And then it's just like, I don't know. I'm going to watch this movie again now because I've not seen it for a couple of years. And it is undeniably the Coen's best work.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Easily.
I randomly watched that scene. I don't know why, about like three, four weeks ago when he's at the gas station. He doesn't kill him in the scene. And he has that like candy and he's asking about like gas when he's asking about, he's kind of like interfering this guy. And the guy gets so uncomfortable because he's like a really innocent dude. And Anton never raises a gun, doesn't do anything violent in it, but it's so uncomfortable. And you see so much of the character in it. And he's just being really antagonistic for no reason.
It's the smile that he does. It's like that Cheshire cat grin, just like staring at this guy who just, and he just, I can't remember what he asked him, but he's asking a bunch of questions and you just see the guy like clam up and just be like,
yeah,
I just want you to go away unless you creep me out.
Yeah, that's no one trouble, mister. Andrew is not raising his voice. He's not, raising a fist or anything like that. He's just like, he's just kind of playing with him. He's playing him like he's just like, that's what ants, right? And it's a beautiful scene because it does so much for the character going forward. It's quite early in the film. He's like, what the fuck is up with this guy? He just sees everyone else as like lesser than him. He sees everyone else as things to play with, right?
It's so good. And what's the scene where they get the adjacent hotel rooms? I'm gonna watch this movie tonight. It's so good. If you've not seen No Country for Old Men, it is amazing. I've never read the book. Apparently, the book, everyone said.
The book's really good. The book is the best book I read in university because we had to do like an essay about it. But yeah.
Well, I think it's untouchable. I think Anton Chigurh is in his own little category. I don't think I'm going to bring the Terminator. I know that people will be shouting, screaming about it, but.
Yeah. I also had Loki, but because I think Loki's great. Fuck. And I love Loki. But
it's not a bad guy.
I mean, he's not anymore. But you know, when he was a bad guy, he was amazing. He was very lovable.
He was an anti-hero always.
I mean, in the first Avengers, he like murdered like a 100,000 people or something. Yeah. But anyway, I think we're kind of in agreement, really, because the way we talked about Anton Chigurh compared to the rest of the villains, like,
can I bring one person to the table?
Sure.
In fact, I'm gonna let you pick. I've got two people that start with Han.
Two people start with Han. Right?
Yeah. Which one would you like? Do you want the first one or the second one?
The second one.
Second one. Hans Lander, who is Christoph Waltz from Inglourious Basterds.
Oh, that's a good one.
So the other person was Hannibal Lecter. Because he's never, apart from in Hannibal, he was never actually the main villain of the movie. He was kind of like just a guy pissing with people.
I think he's good. And like Anthony fucking, I forgot his name. The dude who plays Hannibal, the second dude who plays Hannibal. Anthony Hopkins, yeah. It's great. But I also think he's not, I don't think Hannibal Lecter is even like a top 10 villain in my eyes. But yeah.
He's probably I think the performances are great, but yeah, the way it's written, he's other than Hannibal, and people who've read the books, like, don't yell at me. But other than Hannibal, he's not the main guy. Like, obviously, in Red Dragon, it's the Red Dragon. It's Buffalo Bill in Silence of the Lambs. In Hannibal, it's him. In Hannibal Rising, that was just a bad movie.
A lot of them are bad movies.
Anyway, Hans Lander. And Standentführer Hans Lander is the main bad guy in Quentin Tarantino's Inglourious Basterds, and portrayed by Christoph Waltz. Obviously, we don't need to sit here and go, well, here's why he's a bad guy. He's a Nazi.
He's a Nazi, yeah. Got it on lockdown. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you want to hear us break down why the Nazis are bad, I recommend a different show.
And if we do that, I'm gonna make really bad jokes about
but he's the Nazi guy. He tries to make a deal to get away with it. There's that obviously very famous scene where he's just there saying that's a bingo, like again and again, as he tries to make his deal because the war is lost. He is a snaky piece of shit. Absolute piece of crap who committed atrocities, committed war crimes, and then tried to politically get himself out of it by making a deal to go live in America and be very rich.
Yeah, I mean, what can you do? It's like, yeah, I think a lot of people would make that choice, but it's also, it was the, it's such an iconic first scene of the movie that I think there are also really good, like every scene he's in, he's just amazing in. But the first scene is the one which is like, he's so smart and manipulative and hateful in that first scene. And like, he knows really that the family are just trying to help other people, but he doesn't care. Yeah, it's just like he has a mission to do, and he just, a belief, a dogma, that he's like, no, I'm going to fulfill this because he hates Jews or something, right? He loves the Führer, right? And it's probably like one of the best first scenes in a movie ever, right? Like, I can't think of a better one.
No, I think you're possibly right. I think particularly in this type of movie, there's not a lot better. But I think with this character as well, if it doesn't, he will believe anything if it benefits him. That's very much shown at the end where he's like, he wants to go live in America, the whole country that they've been fighting this entire time.
Yeah, it's like, it works for me dollars, right now.
And that's what works for me right now. And I think a lot of people obviously like that in real life, because when things stop benefiting them, they just search for something else, these narcissistic little snakes. So I think as well, it's a masterful performance by Christoph Waltz. I think his performance in Django kind of overshadows his work in Inglourious Basterds a little bit. But I think this is easily one of his, this is his favorite performance of mine.
Yeah.
Yeah. As good as Django Unchained is, and his performance in that is, for very different reasons, very good. And I think he is a proper bad guy for a different reason than Shakur. I think Hans is scary because of his beliefs in the movie, but also the manpower he's got behind him to just destroy you, because he's not someone that gets his own hands dirty. Whereas Shakur is, again, I use that Terminator analogy, if you're in his crosshairs, he will hunt you till he will go to the bottom of the ocean if he has to find you.
He's Christoph Waltz's breakout performance, right? I think it was the thing that elevated him to a much higher level. And
I agree with that. I think he did win an Oscar for it as well. Yeah.
And like, it was absolutely well deserved. He's actually not in the film that much. I think he literally has 5 scenes, I want to say. But he just steals the scene every time. Like, he's incredible.
Yeah, he's one of those actors where you want to tell him what you wanted to do, and then you want to wind him up, and you just want to hit record.
Yeah, for sure.
I firmly believe a lot of his performances in Django and in this, I reckon a lot of them are ad-libbed.
Oh yeah, yeah, I hope so.
Especially with those directors, like with Tarantino, I don't feel like anything's really tightly scripted. I get that impression of him. I might be wrong.
Yeah. I reckon the script is good, but it's also, so I've got the Pulp Fiction screenplay, I'm pretty sure, here.
Oh, really?
That's cool. Yeah, I read it a couple of times, and a lot of it is quite different, but a lot of it is really great. Like, Tarantino is a fucking icon and very inspirational to me, but like, a lot of it is quite different than how it appears in the movie.
I had a Guy Ritchie. I can't remember who I was watching an interview with. Oh, it's gone from my head now. But he said a lot of it, you just turn up and it's like, well, turn up on the day, we'll work it, and we'll just see what happens. Yeah. Yeah.
Quite like that in a way. I mean, it's going to be a long day. There's going to be lots of long days of that. It's not just like, but it's like, you know, there's a lot of soul to that sort of filmmaking.
Ah, definitely. But anyway, I think we're both in agreement, even though Landa's coming at the end.
Yeah, we should have a little poll. I think we should choose our top three best villain. I think Madame Web, sure, is in there. Anton Skrull is definitely in that poll. I think the one you said Hans
Landa.
Where is second name? Landa. We need a third.
Should we just put someone that we've not even spoken about?
Sure.
Yeah, you know what? Gary Oak.
All right, I like it. Gary Oak. Yeah, fuck it.
You think Gary Oak's a real bad piece of shit? If the guy that you used to call asshole, you have to find creative ways to spell it on your Game Boy Color because you weren't allowed to use bad words.
First thing you realise what a villain was.
Yeah, a guy who was just doing what you wanted to do and didn't really do anything bad to you at all.
Guy had a better team for no reason. He killed his rat, okay?
Guy that you beat like 10 times in a game and never lost to. Yeah.
Gary Oak, fuck it.
Who was always ahead of you. Yeah, you're like, what you still got Zubat for?
I've got a fucking Mew.
Yeah. All right, so yeah, let us know who you think is the best villain. And bear in mind, we're saying best villain, the character, not your favorite actor. Don't tell us that, like, Jason Momoa from Fast X, because he's great. Like, no one cares about your opinion. It's purely what we think. So pick from the poll. Hans Landa, Anton Shakur, Gary Oak. Yeah, make your own podcast if you want to talk about Jason Momoa from Fast X. I've not even seen this movie. I don't know why I'm picking on it.
I don't think I'll ever watch Fast X.
No. You seen the Marvels? I've heard it's real bad.
No, it's kind of sad for me to say this, but I don't really care that much about the MCU anymore. I don't know what's coming off them all. They feel a bit lost for sure. Like, like after Secret Invasion, I was like, I watched it all. I watched all of Loki. I did like Loki. Loki season two was a lot of fun, but and it ends really cool. But also, I didn't care as much I used to, and it's a bit sad. A little bit sad. Like, I'd love Marvel to course correct to make things awesome again.
I think they will. I think, as you said, they need to find themselves again. I mean, that's what I was going to talk about at the beginning, where I said something I'm not mad about, but only because like four people messaged me when the recent Blade news came out. Yeah. And my reply was always, well, no matter what they do, it's going to be a bad movie because there's no real focus. And they're forcing it at this point.
They're
kind of just forcing all their content without much thought. And you can't keep firing directors and writers after directors and writers after directors and writers and hope to make anything like great, because they're just gonna, it's like playing that game on Whose Line Is It Anyway, where you just have to keep telling a story and then the person just has to respond like improv style. You can't.
Yeah, it is, definitely.
So, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, you never know. Some great writer is going to come along and do the good script. And like, it can be great. You never know. Hopefully, it will be. I'd love Blade to be great.
Hopefully, everything's good. Like, I hope all the content's good. But yeah, they definitely need to find themselves a little bit again. But we don't, because we are there. We've got our eight in the bracket. We don't remember who they are.
We will by next week. Yeah.
But I will find out and I will upload the bracket for the best of the best coming next episode with the eight best. So it was best weapon, best bad guy, best movie monster, best gang. There were some more.
There were four
others that we've done.
Last 10 weeks. There was a lot of best.
There was a lot of best. So best fictional weapon, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I remember who won that. I feel like the noisy cricket won. I don't remember why.
Maybe, yeah. I remember talking about noisy cricket. I remember that we talked about the Trident of Atlantis for a long time.
Oh, I think that one actually.
Might have been. Because
wasn't it that it's actually if you have the Trident, you rule the sea?
Yeah, something like that.
Javier Bardem's in this bracket twice. He's King Trident in the Little Mermaid.
Yes, yeah. I mean, Javier Bardem might be the best of the best.
Yeah, if he rules the sea and he's a human shark.
That's pretty strong.
Wow, that is strong. Well done, Javier. It's pretty good. Oh, isn't it best vehicle?
Yeah, we definitely have best vehicle.
Don't know who won that. Probably the Shaggin' Wagon from Dumb and Dumber. No one else.
Well, yeah, we talked about that for sure.
Yeah, we did. Knight Rider probably won.
Yeah, we definitely did. Yeah.
I think you tried to put in Lightning McQueen, and then we had an argument because Lightning McQueen's actually alive, so is he a vehicle? Anyway, yeah, we'll be back. I'm not going to say next week, just in case that we're not, but you can find Rogue Opinions at Rogue_opinion. Say there's unlimited content on there. Not strictly true. There is a limited amount of it, but more will come. So but technically, is that unlimited? It's like a bottomless brunch when you're waiting for the waiter to refill it.
It is. It's a perfect way to describe
the bottomless brunch of podcast feeds. It's nothing but Prosecco and cheese at 11 a.m.
That's a good place to be.
Prosecco and cheese is a good name for a show.
It is, yeah.
Now I just need the format. Yes, actually. And I reckon it'd be one really skinny guy and one really fat guy.
Yeah.
There we go. You can find me at NathanAdler92. Ben, where can people find your shirtless buff body?
Nowhere really, except this podcast. 2100 on Instagram. BTEbitWrite is my writing Instagram. I've got a website somewhere. Which is 2write7.wordpress, I'm pretty sure. Mm-hmm. And I have a Twitter or an X, which I can't remember my Ben_EBERT.
Yeah, that is correct. On Monday, we'll be back soon. Speak to you then. Bye now.